That's all from a powerful earthquake that rocked Turkey and Syria. Rises to more than 2,300, and that's why rescue and search operations going on for those trapped under the rubble. Meanwhile, Turkish President Tayyip Erdogan describes the quake as the biggest disaster for his country in more than a century. Tens of thousands of British nurses and ambulance workers walk out over the pay in the UK's largest ever strike by health workers. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behrouz Necefik. Good to have you with us. Now, beginning with our saddest story, a death toll from a 7.8 magnitude quake hitting southern Turkey and northern Syria has risen to more than 2,300. Officials in Turkey have confirmed more than 1,500 deaths and thousands of people injured. The Turkish Disaster Management Agency has called for international support. A search and rescue operations go on for many still trapped under the rubble. The death toll is likely to rise substantially in the coming hours as the earthquake hit when many people were sleeping. Meantime, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has described the quake as the biggest disaster for his country in more than a century.
We were shaken by the biggest disaster in the last century after the 1939 Erzincan earthquake. We have prioritized search and rescue operations. 9,000 personnel are currently involved in search and rescue operations. This number is constantly increasing with those who reach the earthquake zone from outside.
South across the border in Syria, the quake has killed more than 800 people and injured over 1,000. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad chaired an emergency cabinet meeting to discuss how to deal with the situation. According to Syrian media, a nationwide action plan has been chalked out. All public and private sectors have been asked to mobilize their available capabilities to carry out rescue operations. Currently, tough weather conditions have hampered rescue efforts. Okay, from Istanbul, let's bring in our correspondent, Rashan Saglam. She's been watching all this since it happened. Rashan, bring us up to date. What's going on? Is help? This is the most important question I want to ask you. Is the aid reaching out to the people badly in need of it?
A few minutes ago, the vice president Fuad Oktay was speaking to the press from the disaster agency headquarters in Ankara. He said that they are trying to provide help to all the people who were left without a shelter in the 10 cities that were affected by the earthquake that took place this morning and the one that happened in the afternoon as well. Now, Fuad Oktay said that we are giving food supply, medical supply, clothing. We are giving blankets and everything that people may need if they want to stay in those cities, in the streets and in the gardens, in the schools that have been provided by the government. Now, also, the vice president said that we are providing places in other provinces where people can stay in, for example, in the province of Mardin, the province of Elazığ, and in Bingöl, in Antalya as well. Buildings and shelters were provided for those people, and they can move from tonight if they have private vehicles, and if they don't, they will have to wait until tomorrow morning. The government will be able to evacuate the people from those 10 cities to these areas where they have shelters ready for them. Now, also, Fuad Oktay said that we call the people who have been trying to rescue other people from under the debris to stay away now. He thanked them for all their efforts, but now the professional rescue teams have to work because, as you know, the sun has gone and with the night coming and no electricity in 7 cities out of 10. The electricity was cut totally in 7 cities. So the rescue efforts will be harder, of course, so they needed the professional people to work. He said that we have generators working 24/7 to help the rescue teams and to shed light on the rescue efforts, and we only need the professional teams to be working on the ground now. As for the casualties, he said that the numbers have reached 1,541 casualties, and only in Hatay 520 have been dead in Hatay alone. Also, the injured are 9,733. And as I mentioned, no electricity in seven cities, as those 70 cities have been called disaster areas by the vice president. He also said that 3,471 buildings have collapsed so far, including the ones that collapsed in the first earthquake that was 7.8 magnitude, and the second earthquake that happened this afternoon, 7.6 magnitude. Now, he also said that the Antakya airport will stay closed. However, the airport of the other airports will open, including the Gaziantep and the Kahramanmaraş airports that were closed all day. They have opened for people who want to leave the cities of Kahramanmaraş and Gaziantep towards other safer areas.
It doesn't look good at all. Hopefully, things will work out as soon as possible. Thank you for that, Rashan Saglam, our correspondent in Istanbul. Now, in the meantime, international offers to help Turkey and Syria with rescue efforts are pouring in the wake of the deadly quake. Iranian President Raisi offered condolences to the bereaved family, saying that his country is ready to provide immediate relief aid to both countries. The Russian government also sent its condolences, expressing preparedness to help the affected nations overcome the impacts of the natural disaster. Similar offers have been made by China, India, Britain, and France, among others. President Erdogan of Turkey saying that 45 countries have offered help with search and rescue. According to the EU, more than 10 search and rescue teams from member states have been mobilized. The World Health Organization also saying it's activated a network of emergency medical teams. They will deliver essential care to the injured and the most vulnerable victims. Now, in other news, Iran saying that a visit to Tehran by the director of the International Atomic Energy Agency is possible in the near future, provided technical preparations are in place. Foreign Ministry spokesman says Iran has been in touch with the agency and dialogue between the two sides will continue in the future. The IAEA chief said last month that he might visit Iran in February in an attempt to restore cooperation with the country. The Iranian official also spoke about a talks for revival of the 2015 nuclear deal. Kanani said that parties are exchanging messages through different channels. Iran has always welcomed efforts to facilitate the process and shown goodwill throughout the negotiations. The talks have been stalled for months. Tehran says the pause is due to Washington's procrastination and refusal to provide guarantees. Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has wrapped up his week-long visit to Latin American states. During the meetings, the top diplomat discussed ways to enhance his country's cooperation with countries such as Venezuela, Cuba, and Nicaragua.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian is on the final leg of his trip to Latin America, where he has met with a number of high-ranking officials in an effort to boost bilateral and multilateral relations. Cuba was the latest destination of Amir Abdollahian, where he met with Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel. During the meeting, they discussed matters of mutual interest at bilateral and international levels. The top Iranian diplomat voiced his country's categorical support for Havana while condemning sanctions on Cuba and foreign intervention in its internal affairs. Díaz-Canel, for his part, said despite all the existing pressures, Cuba is determined to cooperate with friendly countries and work with them to eliminate obstacles and challenges lying ahead. The Cuban president criticized U.S. unilateralism and said that his country has earned political independence at a high price and would preserve it. Amir Abdollahian also met with his Cuban counterpart, Bruno Rodriguez Parrilla. Both diplomats wrapped the U.S. sanctions policy against others, including Iran and several South American countries, saying such a policy is doomed to fail. Before Cuba, the top Iranian diplomat paid a visit to Venezuela, which is maintaining strong bilateral relations with Tehran. During a meeting between Amir Abdullahian and Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, the two sides discussed ways to strengthen cooperation further in various fields, including energy. They also called for heightened vigilance in the face of U.S.-led pressure and bullying. Maduro also pointed to common challenges being faced by Venezuela and Iran. Amir Abdullahian also traveled to Nicaragua as part of his Latin American trip. In a meeting with President Daniel Ortega, he condemned unlawful sanctions imposed by the U.S. and certain Western countries on Iranian individuals and entities. He stressed, however, that the Islamic Republic has managed to move forward despite the coercive measures designed to stop the country's progress. Amir Abdullahian voiced Tehran's eagerness for closer cooperation in various fields, saying Iran sets no limits to the promotion of cooperation with Nicaragua. Ortega, for his part, highlighted shared concerns of Tehran and Managua. He said that the two countries have a common enemy, adding that what Iran fought and defeated in 1979 was the same Nicaraguans rose up against in the same year.
The Latin American visit by Iran's top diplomat highlights the need for countries such as Iran, Venezuela, Nicaragua, Cuba, and even Brazil to form an alliance to stand against U.S. hegemony and unilateralism. Latin American states aren't the only ones. Even many African nations are also eager to enhance ties with the East, namely with Iran, Russia, and China.
Amir Abdullahian's visit to Latin America puts under the spotlight the significance of his meeting with officials there. One of the most important highlighted by almost all leaders was that the ongoing developments in Latin America and elsewhere in the world are creating new opportunities for multilateralism. That was particularly underlined by the top Iranian diplomat, who dismissed unilateralism as an obsolete doctrine on the global stage. He stressed that unilateralism cannot respond to developments and changes taking place worldwide. In the case of Iran and Venezuela, the officials of the two OPEC members found a common ground to solidify their relations to deal with a common enemy, the United States, which has come up with crippling sanctions against them for years. Standing against the U.S. and Western imperialism was another topic of discussion during the Iranian officials' visit. That was underscored in Daniel Ortega's comments, where he said the enemies of global peace and tranquility have maintained their imperialistic policies and considered the whole world, not just Latin America, as their backyard. Ortega, however, expressed hope that imperialism cannot last any longer. On sanctions, Latin American leaders echoed the stance of the Iranian foreign minister, who called such measures a terrorist threat being used by imperial powers as leverage. They stressed the need for boosting cooperation in trade and technology, among other things, to overcome those curbs. It seems that shared challenges have brought these countries together to push against U.S. hegemony. And what could make a difference? Moving away from the U.S. dollar, establishing a common currency, enhancing bilateral and multilateral trade. It seems that an oriental shift is largely taking place in today's world. That is visible in countries on the African continent that are trying to enhance ties with the East, namely Russia and China, and Latin American nations that are standing firm against U.S. unilateralism. All these point to their rejection of Western hegemony.
Tens of thousands of nurses and ambulance workers in the UK walking out in the largest ever strike by health workers in that country. Health providers have been staging industrial actions over the past months in a pay dispute, but Monday's stoppage is unseen in the 75-year history of the National Health Service in terms of scale. Workers from across sectors, including healthcare, railway, and education, have been staging mass walkouts since last summer. They demand an increase in their wages that's in line with the double-digit inflation. The government, however, insists that pay rises are unaffordable and cause more price hikes. The UK and other European countries have seen an economic crunch amid a rampant inflation due to the war in Ukraine and sanctions on Russia. Beijing has criticized Washington for its decision to shoot down a Chinese balloon that recently entered into American airspace.
We have made it clear that this was an unexpected incident of force majeure that could not be controlled, but the U.S. still deliberately hyped it up and even attacked it by force. This is an unacceptable and irresponsible behavior. The U.S. insisted on using force in disregard of China's repeated explanations, which is an obvious overreaction. China firmly opposes it.
A Chinese foreign ministry spokeswoman questioned the U.S.'s stance on the issue, saying that such incidents show how sincere it is about improving ties with Beijing. She urged Washington not to escalate the issue or take further action to harm its interests. Mounting said the two countries should rather handle such isolated incidents in a calm manner without using force. China says the balloon on meteorological and other scientific missions accidentally strayed into U.S. airspace. But the U.S. claims the balloon was being used by China in an attempt to surveil America's strategic sites. The controversy has strained already tense relations between the two countries, with the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken canceling his planned visit to Beijing. Now, in other news, Israeli forces have killed seven members of the Hamas resistance movement in a raid on a refugee camp in the city of Jericho or Erihah in the occupied West Bank. Regime forces arrested a Hamas commander during the incursion and took away the bodies of the dead. The refugee camp was under military siege for the past 9 days. The Israeli military conducted several raids, claiming they were after alleged perpetrators of a shooting at a restaurant. Now, that triggered clashes with Palestinians who shot down an Israeli drone on Monday. Hamas and the Islamic Jihad resistance movements have condemned the raids. They say that such atrocities will not frighten Palestinians and force them to abandon their cause. The Israeli military has killed at least 43 Palestinians during raids in the occupied West Bank so far this year. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Russian officials say the strengthening of Ukraine's missile power by the United States will not change the war equations and will only prolong the crisis. They say the delivery of new missile launchers and long-range missiles by Washington to Kiev has not changed the reality of the war on the ground and will only prolong the conflict that was created in the first place by NATO and the West. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The Defense News website has covered this story and tells us more. The Pentagon has announced that the United States will allow Ukraine to fire long-range missiles sent to the country at Kiev's discretion. The Pentagon said on Friday, 3rd of February, it is up to the government in Kiev to decide how to use new rockets being delivered for the U.S.-supplied HIMARS launchers. Pentagon's statement is a confirmation that the latest batch of munitions sent by the U.S. military to Ukraine to fight Russia will include ground-launched small-diameter bomb rockets. The Boeing-manufactured GLSDB, or ground-launched small-diameter bomb rockets, consist of a rocket motor mated with an airplane bomb, with an estimated range of up to 150 kilometers. Friday's announcement listed additional munitions for the HIMARS and precision-guided rockets, confirming the information leaked to Reuters news agency recently Brigadier General Patrick Ryder told reporters that this indeed included the ground-launched small-diameter bomb rockets. Brigadier General Ryder also pointed out that the US would not stand in the way of Ukrainians using the missiles to strike deep into Russia. He said on Friday, when it comes to Ukrainian plans on operations, clearly that is their decision. They are in the lead for those, he added. So I'm not going to talk about or speculate about potential future operations, but again, all along, we've been working with them to provide them with capabilities that will enable them to be effective on the battlefield. Meanwhile, the Reuters news agency claimed to have seen a Boeing document saying the first deliveries of the new munitions could be as early as spring of 2023. Bloomberg news agency cited unnamed government sources as saying the timeline for munitions delivery could be as long as 9 months, depending on when the US Air Force issues the contract. Kiev has repeatedly requested the West to supply its forces with the MGM-140 Army Tactical Missile System rockets, which have a range of some 300 kilometers. Till now, the Ukrainian forces have used the HIMARS launchers supplied by the West to strike both military and civilian targets. The US and its allies have not directly taken part in the hostilities, but continue to send weaponry and ammunition to Kiev, amounting to over $32 billion, since Russia launched its special operation almost a year ago. Moscow has warned the West against flooding Ukraine with arms and munitions, asserting such a move will not stop Russia from reaching its objectives and would merely prolong the conflict and add to the casualties and destruction. The website of Business Insider has also covered this story and tells us more. Russia has warned if the United States supplies Ukraine with longer-range missiles, Washington will cross a red line and become a party to the conflict, nearly 1 year into Moscow's military operation in the ex-Soviet Republic. In a recent press conference, the Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said Russia reserves the right to defend its territory. She warned if Washington decided to supply longer-range missiles to Kiev, then it will be crossing a red line and will become a direct party to the conflict. The United States has already provided Kiev with advanced rockets capable of hitting targets up to 80 kilometers away, while so far refusing to publicly announce it would send rockets with more than double that range. Since the beginning of the war, the U.S. has been providing Kiev with military aid, including at least 16 HIMARS systems, four of which arrived back in August. HIMARS is a light multiple rocket launcher that can hit targets with precision. It is capable of launching all rockets specified in the multiple launch rocket system family of munitions. Its manufacturer, Lockheed Martin, says the system has a recognized and proven range of up to 300 kilometers. While Kiev is imploring for more Western weapons, Moscow says it sent troops to prevent Ukraine being used as a platform for Western aggression and to defend Russian speakers in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has time and again said the US is prolonging the war in Ukraine as part of what he called Washington's efforts to maintain its global hegemony. Russia's Itatass news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. A senior Russian foreign ministry official has warned Western countries that supplying long-range and more advanced weaponry to Ukraine would cross Russia's red lines, and in that case, they have to be ready for a response. Director of the Russian Foreign Ministry's second CIS department, Alexei Polishchuk, said recently, "As for the red lines, we have already designated them. First of all, These are the deliveries of long-range or more powerful weapons to Kiev. Specific measures of response to the actions by the United States and its allies, supply weapons to the Kiev regime will be defined following a thorough analysis of the developing situation. The high-ranking Russian diplomat said Russia has sufficient tools to implement them. Recently, the U.S. State Department announced that the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has repeatedly stated that it has no intention of taking direct part in the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. It claimed, "As long as the United States or our allies are not attacked, we're not going to get directly engaged in this conflict, either by putting American troops to fight in Ukraine or attacking Russian forces." The United States is worried that the targeting Russia's territory and crossing Moscow's red line would lead to the escalation of the war and draw Washington into a direct conflict with the Russian President Vladimir Putin. Meanwhile, another senior Russian official has warned the supply of more advanced weaponry to Ukraine will just add fuel to the fire, culminating in more retaliatory strikes by Russian forces. The deputy chairman of the Russian Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, who is also the country's former president, told journalist Nadana Friedrichsen in a written interview published on Saturday, 4th of February, that in case Ukraine receives new weaponry, all regions remaining under its rule will also burn. Dmitry Medvedev said more aid to Ukraine would mean more retaliation. Journalist Nadana Friedrichsen asked Medvedev whether the use of longer-range weapons might force Russia to negotiate with Kiev. Medvedev insisted that the use of longer-range weapons by Ukraine and its allies will not force Russia to hold negotiations. Dmitry Medvedev said, "The result will be just the opposite." He emphasized that Russia is ready to use all types of weapons in accordance with its doctrinal documents.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. When Imam Hussein alayhi salam decided to go for Mecca and eventually to Karbala, under the circumstances which were not, you know, a pleasant journey, Zainab, a married woman, she has her own life now. She did not hesitate even for a moment, and Abdullah bin Ja'far had no problem in her decision to leave the safety and security of the house of Abdullah, the luxury and comfort of the house of Abdullah, and to go with the Imam of her time. From Medina to Mecca, from Mecca to Karbala, and after Karbala to Kufa and Sham, and all the way back to Medina. That decision that Zainab makes, it was not a decision, it took a few days and she had to talk about it. No. Because she was the daughter of Imam al-Muttaqeen. Raised by Fatima al-Zahra with the values of Islam, and this is where she basically, you know, without any hesitation, goes with the Imam of her time, who was also the brother. And so the level of obedience and love is intensified, the Imam as well as the brother. And she basically served the cause of Hussein, which was the cause of Islam, and the cause of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in the best manner. Let me just read to you one statement from the sermon she gave extempore in Kufa. And this is not in the Darbar of Ibn Ziyad. This is when the caravan is taken as captives into Kufa. Ibn Ziyad Mal'un had asked the people to come out of their homes, line up on the both sides of the street, because he wanted to show his victory and also intimidate the people that if you oppose, this is what will happen to you. And the women were told that if they can go, they go on the roof. And at that time when the caravan moves in among the people, you know, Zainab realized they are all crying. And this is where she says to them, "Atabkuna wa tanhabuna?" Are you crying and wailing now? "Wallahi fabku kathiran wadhaku qalilan." By Allah, cry a lot and laugh a little, because you are afflicted with his shame. The shame of the act what has happened now, it will never be washed away from you ever. How can you wash away the crime of killing the family of the last of the prophets, the family of the source of Risalat and messengership? How can the crime be washed of killing Sayyida Shabab Ahl al-Jannah, the chief of the youths of paradise, the one who was your shelter in confusion and the light of your proof? You have earned the wrath of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and humiliation and poverty is your lot. And she was very, very clear, you know, in condemning the people, that now you're crying, you should have been there to support Muslim bin Aqil. You should have been there to support my brother. Not only that, she becomes the voice of Hussein after Karbala, she also becomes the protector of the children of Hussein. When we look at the situation of Imam Zainul Abideen, according to Sheikh Saduq, Zainab became naib on behalf of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, naib of Imam Sajjad. In order to protect the life of Imam Sajjad, he will be silent, Zainab will speak. And she did this at every stage. Even on the day of Ashura, when Shimr Mal'un came with his soldiers into the tents, and when he saw this young, you know, man still alive, and he says, "What is your name?" And when he realized this is son of Hussein, he says, "Ibn Ziyad has given us the instruction not to leave anyone from the children of Hussein alive." And he gave the order to kill. This is where Zainab comes in the front. He said, "Before you kill him, you have to kill me." Similarly, we see in the Darbar of Ibn Ziyad in Kufa, when there was exchange of, you know, words between Ibn Ziyad and Imam Zainul Abideen, where he very courageously responded to the words of Ibn Ziyad. At the end, Ibn Ziyad says, "You know, you have this courage to speak, even though you are my prisoner." He turns towards his soldier and he says, "You know, wadhrib unuqa, chop off his neck." This is where Zainab comes again in the front. He said, "Aren't you ashamed? After having done so much, you still want to spill blood? If you have to do that, first you will have to kill me." This is where Zainab now is becoming Shariqatul Hussein, after his Shahadat, protecting the children of Hussein. In the Darbar of Yazid, you know, I talked about the khutbah of Bibi Zainab many times, but one incident there, again, protecting the children of Hussein. When they were presented there in the Darbar of Yazid, with all the people from a different level sitting there, One of the mal'oon, evil ones, looked at Fatima bint al-Husayn and says to Yazid, Yazid, I want you to give her to me as a slave. This is the family of the Prophet. This is where Zainab could not tolerate at all. Immediately she responds, before even Yazid would say anything. She turned to that person and says, you are wrong. By Allah, you will be put to shame. And then look at her courage. This is where it is the voice of Zainab, but the courage behind is the courage of Ali. Where she says, neither can you do this, nor can he. What you are asking, you can't do it. And you are asking Yazid to do that, even he has no right to do that. And then referring to Yazid, she says, this is where, you know, Yazid becomes very angry. And he says, I can do it if I want that. And this is where Zainab says, "Kalla wallahi ma ja'ala Allahu dhalika laka." She says, by Allah, never. Allah has not given you that right to do that. Illa an takhraja min millatina wa tadinu bighayri dinina. You can't do this unless you get out of the fold of Islam and follow a religion other than our religion. Because this is against our laws and against our Sharia and against our principles. And this is where he, Yazid, says, where is your father and your brother who had gone out of the fold of Islam. And this is where Zainab again says, aren't you ashamed that it was to Allah's religion and to my father's religion and to my brother's religion and to my grandfather's religion that you and your father were guided to? This Islam that you claim to follow, even nominally, that is the Islam of my brother, Islam of my father, Islam of my grandfather, Islam of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So Zainab was Sharikatul Hussein in the true sense. She was partner of Hussein ibn Ali in suffering. Perhaps that's why she is also known as Ummul Masaib, mother of sufferings. Some ulama put this very beautifully where they say, if you look at Ahl-e Kisa, the Panjatan, five of them, Zainab was witness of wafat of Rasulullah. That was first musibat in her life. Zainab was witness of the wafat of Fatima. That was the second musibat in her life. Zainab was witness of the shahadat of Amir al-Mu'mineen. She was in Kufa. That was another musibat that she saw. She was witness of what happened to Hassan and the poison. She was witness to that. And she was also the witness of the shahadat of Hussein ibn Ali. And therefore she is known as Ummul Masaib.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen Ghafur Shakurun Wadud Qayyim صابور
وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
The U.S. shot down a Chinese balloon over the Atlantic Ocean just days after it was spotted crossing the United States and adding to already high tensions between Washington and Beijing. A U.S. Air Force F-22 Raptor jet fighter on Saturday, 4th of February, downed the balloon with a single Sidewinder missile off the coast of South Carolina, within U.S. territorial waters, according to U.S. officials. The jet fighter was flying at 58,000 feet below the balloon, which had been flying as high as 65,000 feet. China's foreign ministry has protested, saying U.S. overreacted and violated international norms by shooting down the balloon. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Xinhua News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. China expressed strong dissatisfaction, opposition towards the U.S. use of force to attack China's civilian unmanned airship, Chinese Foreign Ministry said on Sunday, 5th of February, in a statement. The Chinese side has, after verification, repeatedly informed the United States of the civilian nature of the airship and conveyed that its entry into the United States due to force majeure was totally unexpected, the statement said, noting the Chinese side has clearly asked the United States to properly handle the matter in a calm, professional and restrained manner. A Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said on Friday, when answering a relevant query, that the civilian airship is used for research, mainly meteorological purposes. Affected by the westerlies, and with limited self-steering capability, the airship deviated from its planned course. According to the Chinese Foreign Ministry statement, the spokesperson of the U.S. Department of Defense also noted the balloon does not present a military or physical threat to people on the ground. Under such circumstances, the U.S. use of force is a clear overreaction and a serious violation of the international practice. China will resolutely safeguard the legitimate rights and interests of the company concerned and reserve the right to make further responses if necessary, said the Chinese Foreign Ministry statement. The global edition of China Daily has also covered this story and tells us more. On Sunday, 5th of February, the Chinese Foreign Ministry expressed its strong dissatisfaction and protests against the United States for shooting down its balloon. The U.S. shooting was a blatant provocation. The Pentagon has confirmed that the U.S. military has shot down the suspected Chinese spy balloon after it drifted off the East Coast near the Carolinas, which is a blatant provocation. The U.S. should pay a price for what it did. Earlier, on Friday, 3rd of February, the Chinese Foreign Ministry had confirmed that the entity seen over Montana was a civilian airship from China used for research, mainly for meteorological purposes. It deviated far from its planned path due to the westerlies and its limited self-steering capability. A Chinese civilian balloon deviated from its path and straying into the skies over the United States because of force majeure does not constitute infringement of sovereignty, the statement said. Instead, the United States has many a time encroached on China's sea and airspace on purpose in the name of freedom of navigation and overflight. It's the U.S. provocations that should not be indulged by any means. On Saturday, the U.S. announced it was postponing Secretary of State Anthony Blinken's visit to Beijing on 5th of February. Apparently, U.S. politicians wanted to step-by-step make the incident escalate into a bigger crisis. However, America's tricks to defame China will only end up in failure. China had not confirmed a final schedule for Anthony Blinken's visit, though the Chinese Foreign Ministry had earlier responded to the U.S. announcement of a visit by welcoming it for the improvement of bilateral ties. What's more, in the run-up to the expected visit, Washington had not done anything to create the right ground for talks. Instead, it further intensified its containment of China from its military hawks seeing a war with China in 2025 to escalating technology decoupling by pressing Japan and the Netherlands to restrict export of chip manufacturing tools to China. The U.S. State Department even said that Anthony Blinken will, during his visit, instruct China on what to do and what not to do. The U.S. should realize that such a bossy demeanor will not help achieve any fruitful results. Instead, it will destroy bilateral ties. Therefore, a visit, if its aim is to dictate to China, is not welcome in the first place. Now the U.S. is stepping up its bullying tactics, which shouldn't be tolerated at all. China should be prepared to take countermeasures. The Associated Press has also covered this story and tells us more. The U.S. military on Saturday, 4th of February, shut down a suspected Chinese spy balloon off the Carolina coast after it was traversed sensitive military sites across North America. China has insisted the flyover was an accident involving a civilian aircraft and threatened repercussions. President Joe Biden issued the order but had wanted the balloon downed even earlier, on Wednesday. He was advised that the best time for the operation would be when it was over water, U.S. officials confirmed. Military officials determined that bringing it down over land from an altitude of 60,000 feet would pose an undue risk to people on the ground. China responded that it reserved the right to take further action and criticized the United States for an obvious overreaction and a serious violation of international practice. In its statement on Sunday, 5th of February, China's foreign ministry said China will resolutely uphold the relevant company's legitimate rights and interests and at the same time reserve the right to take further action in response. The presence of the balloon in the skies above the United States this week dealt a severe blow to already strained U.S.-Chinese relations that have been in a downward spiral for years. It prompted the Secretary of State Anthony Blinken to abruptly cancel a high-stakes trip to Beijing aimed at easing tensions. They successfully took it down, and I want to compliment our aviators who did it, President Biden said after getting off Air Force One en route to Camp David. The giant white orb was spotted on Saturday morning over the Carolinas as it approached the Atlantic coast. A jet fighter fired a missile at the balloon, puncturing it while it was about 6 nautical miles off the coast near Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, according to senior Pentagon officials. The spectacle had Americans looking to the skies all week, wondering whether the mysterious balloon had floated over them. The debris landed in 47 feet of water, shallower than officials had expected, and it spread out over roughly 7 miles, and a recovery operation included several ships. U.S. officials estimated the recovery efforts would be completed in a short time, a matter of days and not weeks. U.S. defense and military officials said on Saturday that the balloon entered the U.S. air defense zone north of the Aleutian Islands in Alaska on 28th of January and moved largely overland across Alaska and then into Canadian airspace in the Northwest Territories on Monday. It crossed back into U.S. territory over northern Idaho on Tuesday, the day the White House said President Biden was first briefed on it.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with a number of eulogists, and religious poets in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 12, 2023. The meeting took place one day before the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha. It has been stated numerous places in the Qur'an, then bring a chapter like it. Chapter 2, verse 23. they were not able to produce even one verse similar to the verse of the Holy Quran. Nahjul Balagha, the peak of eloquence, possesses the utmost magnificence, logic, and beauty. The same applies to Sahifat al-Sajjadiyya. The Abu Hamza Thumali supplication, Imam Hussein's supplication on the day of Arafah, and various other supplications, they are all incredibly beautiful. Your art is a continuation of that art. This art can be said to be comprehensive when all its parts are beautiful. It's not enough for just its appearance to be beautiful. The content must also be beautiful. The Quran has a wonderful appearance, and inside it is deep in meaning. This is what Imam Ali alayhi salam says in Nahj al-Balagha, Sermon 18.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The inside of Quran is deep and full of meaning. Now, we do not expect ourselves. I don't expect you to presume that you can produce something similar to it. No. But this is what we should have in mind. That is, the appearance should be beautiful, and the core needs to be filled with meaning and be logical. The same goes for melody. I had particularly planned to talk about this with you, dear elegist and eulogist. A song has meaning. It conveys a meaning. So you may perform a song that does not even have any words. For example, some people produce music from their throat, or some may use instruments to create music. It has no words, but it has meaning. It conveys a meaning. That is how music is. Some songs inspire courage. For example, the song that Haj Sadiq Ahangaran, the famous elegist of the Sacred Defense era, was singing. O army of Sahib Zaman, be prepared, be prepared. Even if the song hadn't had any lyrics, the tone of the song is one that inspires being prepared. Some songs bring depression. They make people depressed. They discourage people. They are different. Some songs lead people towards sins. Many of the songs that are set to instrumental music are like this.
That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.